Welcome to this week's edition of Dugout Dish Podcast. As usual, I'm Andy Kirikides here with my co-host Keith Glasser. Keith, how are we doing?
Great. How are you?
Good. Love that hat, by the way.
St. Paul Saints. Shout out to Coach Larson.
Yeah, he's the man. We'll have him on here one day.
Oh, yeah. Long time listener.
Yeah. Give the scoop on pro ball as well as his college coaching experience. It'll be a grand time. So for today's episode, for you listeners out there, we're going to dive into a nuanced topic that we talk about frequently, and I think it's worth shedding some light on, is competition in college baseball, more specifically, kind of peeling back the onion on the level of play. As you know, Coach Glass, a lot of people like to take the easy way out and just assume that Division One, two, three, that there's this linear relationship in the level of play, when in actuality, it's a little bit more tiered than that. And there's levels of competition within each division, and there's overlap between those divisions within those tiers. So I want to open up with a few thoughts on that, and then we'll see if we can break this down a little bit.
Sure. You know, I think one of the biggest things and misconceptions out there is that, you know, we've talked about before the power fives traditionally in football and hoops and things like that is, you know, doesn't necessarily equate straight into baseball. You know, there's some, you know, quote unquote power five conferences that aren't necessarily all that great when it comes to baseball. And there's some, you know, mid-major conferences out there, the Sun Belt, CAA, things like that, that are traditionally really good at baseball. You know, so it's a lot more nuanced. I think baseball specifically, you know, it is a little bit of an outlier when it comes to some of these schools and programs that can be competitive and in the top 25 year in and year out, you know, and play super tough competition in conferences. Whereas, you know, when you look at just the football and basketball aspect of it, like those schools might not necessarily compete in the top 25 year in and year out like they do in baseball. So, you know, I get what you're saying. I don't know if I agree with calling it the easy way out. I just think it's more of an uninformed opinion that people have because they look across college athletics as a whole and be like, all right, well, you know, Division I's the greatest because of, you know, the USC's and the Notre Dame's and the, you know, Texas and Alabama and Georgia's of the world, where, you know, we've talked about this before, you know, we played at Marist, like we were competing for the same trophy that LSU just won. You know, and you're comparing apples to oranges at that point when it comes to, you know, talent and resources and everything it is that they have. So, you know, within the levels, whether it's Division I, II, III, JUCO, NAIA, all of those, you know, there's levels of all of those because you're going to have a specific amount of schools at those levels that care more about baseball than they do at other schools, you know, and that's why some of those schools are going to be better, you know, and sometimes there's, you know, the resources that are available at some schools, especially at the Division I level, may be less than what there is at the Division II and Division III level, you know, so it's. So there's more that goes into it and to kind of just chase the, you know, the Division I dream, like while it's, yeah, man, like everyone, you know, aspires to play Division I baseball, but, you know, it might not be, it's not in the cards for everyone, right? Like, you know, it's a shade over 2% of people are going to go play Division I baseball. You know, but the flip side to that is like, one, it might not be the best fit and you might have a better experience at a school at a Division II or Division III level that actually cares more about baseball and the program than they do at the Division I school that is recruiting you. You know, so those are things to think about, you know, like, yeah, you can go play Division I baseball at, you know, we'll get into, you know, the tier breakdown that you've come up with, but you know, that you can go play Division I baseball at a school that is just not really good. You know, and you can go look up the records and see everything just to say you played Division I baseball, but you know, you could also go to a Division II or Division III school that, you know, yeah, Division II, III, but like, you're competing nationally, you know, you have the shot to go to regionals and super regionals and World Series for 2, 3, 4 years of your career. You know, that's a lot more competitive and a lot more rewarding, and a lot more fun than just being a Division I baseball player to say you were, and, you know, going 10-63 over the course of the year. My math's not good. You all know that at this point. I'm a history major. That's more than 56 games, but you get what I'm picking. You're picking up what I'm putting down.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think when you start to look at this tier system, I think there's two things that stick out to me is that the conferences are a good place to start, right? Because if you're gonna throw like some blanket statements out there about different conferences being in certain tiers, I think that's a good place to start. But for me, when you start to look at this, once you get to the conferences, you really got to bear down on the program itself, right? Like Coastal Carolina doesn't play in the SEC, but if any of you guys listening watched college baseball this year, you know, they were in the top 15 for the vast majority of the year. The Campbells, you know, there's programs that aren't in those top 25 or in those quote unquote Power Five conferences that are going to be in that top, you know, that top one tier, maybe not on a year in and year out basis, but occasionally. And then the other thing too is that there's crossover, and we'll, you know, I'll preface this tier system so that nobody gets all their feathers ruffled, because I'm, you know, there's plenty of room for discussion on this topic. You know, we're trying to bucket this into tiers that make sense, and, you know, it's not completely black and white here, but I think we're trying to add some color to this discussion and kind of break it down a little bit. But there's crossover. Like, you get into that third tier for me is where you start to see those other divisions, you know, whether it's Division II, Division III, junior college. Like, I think that's where you really start to see some of this come in. So kind of how I look at it, and me and you have talked about this, instead of those breaking it down by divisions, breaking it into tiers. And for me, there's nine tiers, and you get to the bottom of it and it gets a little bit hazy. But, you know, those first five tiers for me are like fairly straightforward in terms of how it breaks down. So, you know, for tier one, for me, it's generally going to consist of, you know, SEC, ACC, Big 12, Pac-12, Big 10 schools. But it's not even that simple there. Like, as you had alluded to, there's three or four teams in the Sun Belt that are going to stick in this tier and look like they'll stick in this tier for a while. You're going to have a few schools in the Big East, particularly UConn. But like in this year, you can make a legitimate argument that Xavier was a tier one team. You know, regional finalist, 38 wins. You know, you're going to have some schools in the American, like ECU. And you mentioned the CAA and Conference USA, like the top teams in those conferences. Year in and year out, you're going to see a couple of them fit into this tier one, which is kind of that elite level college baseball, which separates itself from pretty much everywhere else. And I mean, I think one of the telling stats is at the end of the year, top 25, there was seven non-Power Five schools in the top 25. And one of those, Oral Roberts, reached Omaha. So that's kind of how I bucket tier one. Like, there's going to be teams at the bottom of the SEC that aren't going to fall into this category. Same thing with the ACC and the Big 12 and the Pac-12. Like, there's teams at the bottom of those conferences right now that aren't tier one teams that are associated with tier one conferences. But there's also going to be some schools from some of those quote unquote mid-major conferences that, you know, they're every bit as competitive as just about everybody else. So any thoughts on tier one?
No. I think you nailed it.
Oh, well, lovely. Tier two for me is where you start to see those bottom Power Five conference teams. You know, yeah, maybe middle of the road, bottom SEC, ACC teams. But this is where you start to see those top end mid-major schools. And this is kind of where they fit, like the top end of the CAA, the top end of the Big East, the Sun Belt, Conference USA, like, there's some ambiguity there, and you'll see some of those tier two schools get into the tier one occasionally. And some of these tier two schools are going to drop down to tier three, kind of dependent on the year. But this is like, for me, top tier mid-major. And I think that one of the other conferences that gets overlooked, and I think that the top one or two teams in this particular conference, which is the Ivy League, I do think they sneak into this second tier. You know, Columbia and Penn have been exceptional in recent years, and I think that on any given day, you know, they're one of those like top 50, 60 programs in the country. I mean, Penn was in a regional final this year. Columbia was in a regional final last year. You know, the bottom of the Ivy League, you know, Dartmouth had a tough year this year. They're obviously not going to fit in this tier, but you know, there's programs that have established themselves as consistent winners that I think they fit in this tier when you stack them up against everybody else.
Yeah. I mean, anytime that you have, you know, back-to-back years of teams in your league making regional finals, you're doing something right. You know, and Columbia has been good. Penn has been really good. You know, it's one of those things, and this is where you kind of get into the tiered system where, you know, the Ivy League is a great example where you have, you know, a handful of teams, you know, two specifically right now in Penn and Columbia that are really good and super competitive at the national level. You know, Penn was in a regional final this year, Columbia the year before, like you said. Columbia also went into Alabama and took the series this year, and they were a, you know, they were a regional host. So, you know, that stuff's not easy to do. You know, and you're right. Like, you know, I know there were some teams in that league that did not have great years this year. You know, but, and that's, you know, some of those years are outlier years, right? Like it's, you're going to luck into wins every now and then. So like there's some outlier things that probably went on there, and I'm not in that program. So I, you know, can't say what happened, but, you know, it's not always going to be that bad every year. You know, but those teams that are towards the bottom of that league are not in that same tier. You know, they're going to fall into a little bit of a different tier, a lower one, because they're not as competitive right now. You know, that doesn't mean that they can't get there in the future, but, you know, for argument's sake, year in, year out, and these are the things you got to look at when you're going through the recruiting process. Like, what have they done over the course of the last 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years, or however long this coaching staff has been there, right? Like, you look at, you know, I don't know how long the Penn staff has been together, but I know it's a substantial amount of time. Like they've been together for a while, which is why you see that success. Same thing with Coach Peretti and his staff. But, you know, look at how long people have been at their school. You know, if they're, you know, not necessarily doing great year in and year out, like that's something that you need to consider. You know, the Ivy League might not be the best comp to talk about this, because at the end of the day, it's an Ivy League education, but get what I'm driving at here. Like, you're going to want to look at what people have done when they're at the schools they're at, and, you know, for how long they've been there. You know, if they've only been there for 2 years, different story than someone who might have been there for 25. So.
Yeah. I mean, when I think of tier two, you know, I think of, like I said, some of these schools are going to fluctuate. Like, they're going to be in that tier one here and there. Like, Northeastern's probably traditionally a tier two team, like a super high level baseball program. They were definitely in the tier one conversation this year. I mean, they were in the top 25 at one point, but like, I think the CAA and it is one of those conferences that, I mean, there's 5 or 6 teams in that conference that are really, really good at baseball. And they kind of fit in that tier two for me in terms of the quality of play that they have. You know, I think the Big East is, you know, with the addition of UConn, Xavier's on the up and up. They've been awesome recently. You got schools like Creighton, Seton Hall had a great bounce back year. Like, you start to see some of these conferences and some of these teams, like, they may be tier three. They're kind of sneaking into that tier two range. These are really, really good programs. They're going to produce a lot of professional players. Traditionally, they're going to be programs that win consistently. And I mean, this is big time baseball. And this is where it starts to get outside of that Power Five conversation where, you know, you'd alluded to it before, but like, football is pretty straightforward. There's a massive gap between the Power Five conferences and everybody else in football. And when you get to the top tier of the SEC and the ACC, yeah, is there a difference between them and, you know, the top team in the ACC versus the, you know, bottom third team in the CAA? Yeah, absolutely. But that gap's not as big as it is in football. You know, for those of you listening, like, if you look at the draft, like, the draft just happened, you know, you're seeing players from these conferences and these teams getting drafted and getting drafted frequently. You know, you're seeing first rounders go from some of these schools. And I think it speaks to how good the baseball is, you know, specifically in these first two tiers, that it, you know, for players that scoff at guys who don't commit to, you know, quote unquote Power Five programs, like, I think you're kind of missing the boat when you're talking about the quality of play and, you know, really being educated on how good you have to be to play at these schools.
Yeah. I mean, you have to be talented, right? Like, you know, it's straightforward. Like, you have to be a really good baseball player to play at some of the highest levels in college baseball. Like, it's said this before, like, when you level up, you go from high school to college, you know, it's going to be different. It's going to be harder. It's going to be tougher than what you've experienced. And the higher level you go in college, the harder it's going to be. So you're going to have to be pretty talented in order to be able to compete at those levels. You know, it's that simple. Same thing. Like, when you get drafted and you go to pro ball, like, no one's like, oh my God, this is so much easier. Like, no, it's harder. You're playing against better players. It's just, it's the reality. It's the cost of doing business there.
Absolutely. Tier three, this is where I think the divisions start to blend a little bit, right? I think they're, for me, tier three is like you've got the true mid-majors that have a track record of winning, right? They might not be a regional team every year, but they're winning more games than they're losing. They got a track record of developing players. Guys are moving on to the next level. Like, that's where I think the Division One piece fits in here. But I think when you start to look at the top level of Division Two, those top 10, top 25 programs, right? You've got like the Millersvilles and the Seton Hills and the Westchesters and North Greenvilles and Southern New Hampshire's, like these Division Two programs that have won, they consistently win, they're producing professional players. I think that they start to fit in this tier. And I think this is the part that people don't want to talk about, right? Because it's easier to not mention it. But this is where I think it starts. And the other piece, I think that there's crossover here, and I think it's a fairly easy conversation to have, is some of the best junior college programs in the country fit in tier three for me. And I'm sure there's some people out there who would say, hey, like they probably belong in tier two, because you start to look at some of the rosters on some of those tier two and tier three programs that we talked about. There's a heck of a lot of junior college guys mixed in there. So if you're just to step back logically, you got to assume that if those junior college programs are producing players that are able to play at that level, that there can't be that big of a gap from them and the player in the teams that they go play for. I mean, there's junior, you know, as well as I do, there's junior college programs in the country where you go look at their starting lineup and their starting rotation, you know, you might have eight or nine Power Five players in those teams. So this is where I think the different divisions start to bleed into each other. Curious to get your thoughts on that, Coach Glass.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that opened my – not think, I know. The thing that opened my eyes was when I first got into coaching in 2008, I was coaching at West Alabama down in Livingston, Alabama. And we were, you know, we were up to sixth in the country at one point in time. You know, I was upstate New York, born and bred, and played Division One baseball. I went into it with a very naive mindset, being like, it's Division Two baseball. How good is this going to be? You know, and part of that was my perception of Division Two baseball was one team in the city that I grew up in that was okay. So I go down there, and all of a sudden, there were dudes everywhere. You know, in our conference, Southern Arkansas had a first rounder that year who was like 93-96 with one of the best breaking balls I've ever seen. We were in a regional. It was us, Lynn, who ended up being the national champion that year. Tommy Canely pitched for him. Florida Southern, who had like seven dudes drafted off their team. Tampa was in that region. Southern Arkansas. I want to say Delta State and Valdosta State were also in that region. You know, we were paired with the Sunshine State Conference, which is obviously a lot of all the Florida schools. You know, and if you've never watched Division II baseball, and, you know, there's really good Division II baseball in the Northeast Mid-Atlantic, But if you think that you're just going to, you know, roll on out and go play at Tampa or Florida Southern or Nova Southeastern, you know, it's big boy baseball. Like, those kids can play. They are really, really good at baseball. It's not what you think Division II baseball is. Like, they can go into some Division I conferences and compete and be in the top half of that conference, top third of that conference, year in and year out. You know, there's dudes littered all over those fields, you know, so it's my eyes were, you know, like I said, I was very, very naive to kind of think that it was a step below and not very good. And all of a sudden I walked out of that like, wow, there's some really good baseball being played here in this conference and in Division II in this section of the country. So, you know, I know for years up in the New England area, Franklin Pierce, when Coach King was there, and they're still very good. You know, Southern New Hampshire has been really good in the past couple of years. Millersville has been unbelievable. You know, so there's a lot of really good conferences. We had Jonathan on. He played in the PSAC, which is one of the best Division II conferences in the country. Like, there's dudes all over that conference. So, you know, you're right. Like, it starts to bleed into it where there's some Division II schools, and specifically because I know I coached in the division and in a region of the country where it's really good, man. Like, I would put them up, and I said this when I got out of it, like, I would put them in the MAC, and we would compete, and we would be good. You know, so it's very naive and short-sighted to say that, you know, Division I is the best if you have, you know, you have no reference of anything else that's going on, because there's high-end Division II is really, really good baseball. Same thing in JUCO. I agree with you. I don't want to elaborate on that anymore. Like, I thought you nailed that one.
Yeah, I mean, shoot, like, you know, you're looking at JUCO guys getting drafted in the top three rounds. Like, you got these Power Five conferences that are littered with junior college guys. Like, you'd be remiss to not acknowledge the fact that that top level of junior college baseball is no joke, and it's not a consolation prize. And guys go there for a lot of different reasons. Some of them go there because they just want to give themselves more chances to get drafted. But I kind of piggybacking off your story, like, it became really evident to me as a college player going and playing summer ball when I'm playing up in the NECBL on a super talented team. You know, a couple guys ended up playing the big leagues. Most of the guys ended up getting drafted. The two of our best guys were Division III guys. Like, they're pitching alongside guys from Clemson and, you know, other ACC schools. And our two most consistent performers the whole summer were a left-handed pitcher from Cortland who carved at like 86 to 88 and a right-handed pitcher from Babson who ended up pitching in the Cubs organization. And we had a junior college kid who was fantastic. And in that moment, as a 19-year-old, I was like, oh, wait a minute. There's really good baseball all over the place. And, like, these divisions don't matter that much, right? Like, yeah, if you know, is Cortland's whole team that good? No, but they got a bunch of dudes on that roster like that. And that was pretty eye-opening for me at a young age. And then seeing it, having coached at multiple levels like you have, you know, there was guys that I had at the Division III level that were better than some players that I had at the Division I level. I'll make, no gray area there for me. You know, I got a chance to work with these guys every single day. And, you know, yeah, they all, you know, was the guys at the Division I level in general better than the guys at the Division III level? Yeah. But there was a little crossover. There were select players who were better. And, you know, if you're listening, as you go through the recruiting process, like, understanding that you don't want to tie yourself to a specific level. Like, if you get recruited by a Division I school that you really like, great. But understand that it's just not that straightforward. Like, and we'll get into a few tiers here. Like, we're getting into this tier four here. You know, for me, it's kind of the low mid-major Division I programs, the really good Division II and JUCO junior college baseball. And then I think this is where you start to see the kind of the top Division III programs. Like, maybe you're looking at like the top 10, top 15 Division III programs. I think they start to sneak into this category. Yeah, you're like, you know, like Lynchburg this year was dominant. I mean, you've had a Trinity team back in the day that went, what'd they go, like 44-1 with a couple major leaguers on the team. Like, there's Division III programs to me that they sneak into this Tier 4. And you've obviously coached at that level. You've had guys move on to pro ball. Like, you probably could speak to that level of play pretty articulately.
Yes. You know, the high level of Division III, and, you know, I think Joe was on here a couple, Coach Reno was on here a couple of weeks ago talking about it too. Like, the physicality at the Division III level over the course of the last, you know, 5 years, and probably over specifically over the last three, has it's a noticeable uptick. You know, you see some of the top level teams in that division, like, they're physical dudes, man. Like, they're not, you know, what a lot of, I think a lot of people consider Division III to be like 13th grade. Like, oh, I'm just going to go to school and show up and play. Like, no, man, you're not going to do that. You know, you could do it at some programs, I'm sure, out there. You know, but it's, you know, it's super competitive at the Division III level. Like, you have teams that are, you know, everybody for the most part is out there actively recruiting. You know, I gone are the days, like, and I don't subscribe, and this might be an unpopular opinion, I do not subscribe to the fact that if you want to play bad enough, there's a place for you. Like, there might be from a roster standpoint, but it might not be a great fit for you academically, socially, everything else. Mainly because everybody is out recruiting nowadays, right? Like, you know, back in the day, I think that was something that would be said when, you know, not everyone was out recruiting, and you know, you could show up on campuses and find a spot to play, and you know, that was what it was. You know, but nowadays with the PBR and Perfect Game and Head First and I-95 and Best in US, and the list goes on and on and on and on with every event that you could possibly imagine out there, you know, and places like Diamond Nation in the Northeast and Baseball Heaven and Northboro out in Boston, Worcester area. Like, there's so many games and events going on that coaches are out, and that doesn't even take into account the just on-campus camps that people are going to and team camps that go on. You know, like, there's so much recruiting going on nowadays that, like, we're to the point of information overload, right? Like, that's where you and I come in, where we help you sift through all of that stuff, you know. But, like, if you're out playing and going to showcases and being seen by coaches and not being recruited, like, something is going on, whether you're not going to be good enough for the schools that is that you're targeting, or, you know, you need to get yourself bigger, faster, stronger, better in order to be recruited. You know, and that's just the reality. It's not, you know, I don't mean that to be negative by any stretch of the imagination. You know, but I think that in the 10 years that I spent at the Division III level, every year I would have people that more or less kind of approached the Division III model of athletics as, you know, it's just, you know, a slight step above club, where, you know, I would like to play, but, you know, I'm really interested. I don't know. Like, hey, man, like, you have to really love playing baseball, especially at Division III level. Like, there's no scholarships. There's travel. You're playing 40 games. There's a huge time commitment. Like, you got to love to do it, because people are going to compete, and you got to, you know, this isn't just a hobby you pick up. And I can speak from my experience, like, my kids loved getting in the weight room. My kids loved working out, being on the field, hitting extra, doing more and competing. Like, they don't do that because it's a hobby to them. They do it because they love it and they want to compete and they want to be good. You know, so it's that mindset of, like, you know, Division III is like, you know, it's 13th grade. Like, it's not. You know, it's super competitive. You get into the high levels, like, there's dudes there, man. Like, you know, and you might not all, you know, you might not see them get drafted, and, you know, they might not be, you know, playing a whole lot of pro ball. I mean, we have a guy, and I know there's guys every year that end up signing, especially with the draft being limited to 20 rounds now, as free agents. But, like, there's some really good players out there, and I think you can see it in the transfer portal. We've talked about it too. Like, there's a lot of Division III guys that are ending up in Power 5 conferences because they're super successful and had phenomenal careers, and coaches can look at it and be like, hey, man, like, he was really good at this school for 4 years, and we also have some, you know, Cape Cod, NECBL, enter in a really good summer league stat that we can, you know, look at, and, you know, that we think that they can compete for time here, you know. So, you're going up against really good players at that level. It's not going to be a, a walk in the park. And, you know, I just think that there's, you know, Division III is still really, really good baseball. I'm obviously biased. I spent 10 years coaching there, but I can tell you firsthand, like, you got to be good if you want to play college baseball at a high level, Division III.
I mean, you experienced it with a couple of your guys moving on to play for really good Division I programs, and you're seeing it recently, like you said. You got, like, I just saw, I sent a text to Eric about how good of a job Coach Leonard's doing up at Middlebury's doing recruiting guys when he's got guys leaving Middlebury with freaking electric arms going to pitch at the University of Washington. He's got guys going to play at BC, you know, for their final 2 years eligibility. Like, those are the type of players that are playing at that level. And I think, you know, like I said, I think some of those top tier Division III teams, like, I think they sneak into that tier four. And I think some of those programs are firmly better than some of the bottom end Division I teams. But, you know, maybe I'm a little bit biased. I've seen some really, really poor baseball at the Division I level, and I've seen some awesome baseball played at the Division III level. And, you know, I think that some of those teams are certainly in that conversation. You know, and I think it's just you gotta understand that that's the reality of it, and that's where kind of college baseball is. And I think you're going to continue to see more of it because of the portal and because of other factors. Like, there's going to be more really good players playing at those schools than there was 10, 15 years ago. Like, Division III baseball has come a long way in the last 10 or 15 years. And some of it has to do with more recruiting, more visibility. The other part of it is that Division I baseball has gotten really good, specifically at the highest levels. And it's had that trickle-down effect that we've talked about before. So, get into tier five. For me, this is like those low end Division I. Like, you're looking at, you know, programs 250 through 300. I think you got your really good Division II programs, JUCO, NAIA, and like your top 25 type Division III programs, you know, or high level Division III programs. I think that's where they sneak in here. Probably not a ton to talk about, but I think, you know, there's still crossover here. And I think it's important to acknowledge that. What do you think about that, Coach, as you chew your popcorn?
Caught me chewing my popcorn. I mean, I think, you know, once you kind of get into the bottom tiers here, like, there's going to be general crossover until we kind of hit the bottom, you know, with the average to below average Division I or Division III and JUCO programs. But, you know, I think the thing that, you know, we're really trying to drive at here when you're listening to this is that, you know, when you're being recruited and you're going through this process, like, there's a lot of things that you need to take into consideration, you know, when you're looking at what schools and programs it is that you could potentially be playing at. You know, and it's everything from, you know, how good have they been? How good has the staff been at developing players? How long has the staff been together? And look, like, this is all dependent upon, you know, funding within staffs. Like, every school has different funding for assistant coaches and things like that. So you might see some turnover in coaches, and that might just be because of, you know, funding for that position. You know, but, you know, if you have staffs that have been around for a long time together and they've had a track record of success and they have all conference guys and they have all region guys and all Americans, like, that's telling you that they have a track record of bringing in guys that fit into their program, that they develop into good players in their conference, good players in the region, and obviously all Americans as well. So, you know, it holds true at all three levels, all five levels, I suppose, you know, but especially Division I, II, and III. You know, if you're looking at a staff that's been, you know, somebody who's been there for 10 years and they have two all conference guys, no all region, and no all Americans, like, you know, how good are they at developing, right? Like, the whole point of you going to this college and is to develop into the best player you can be. And if you see a track record of guys that aren't necessarily being developed into really good players, like, that should be a question that you have in your mind. Now, you conversely, you know, look at a program and they have a ton of all conference guys and all region and all Americans, like, hey, like, they're recruiting the right guys and they're bringing guys in, developing them, and turning them into the best player that they can possibly be. You know, and those are things that you want to take into account when you go through this process. You know, if you look and, you know, someone's been there for 2 years and they have, you know, 5 All-Americans, like, hey, that's awesome. But like, you should also question, are they theirs or the previous guys? What happened there? You know, but it's just doing a little bit of digging instead of taking everything at face value in the recruiting process. Like, our goal as college coaches in the recruiting process is to get you to decide to come play for us, right? So like, I'm gonna do everything in my power to be able to pitch you on the fact that you should come play for me. You know, your job in this process is to be able to, yes, be wooed, but be smart about it. Do some digging, get some research, do some research on, you know, what's going on in that program. How good have they been? What's their track record on development? Things of that nature. And, you know, again, keep it within context. How long have they been there? Has it been 2 years? Has it been 5? Have they been really good? Have they been bad? You know, those are things that you want to take into account. Like, you get somebody who has not been good and they're at a program, it's their second year, and they're telling you that, like, they're going to the ship next year. Like, that should throw up red flags to you. Like, it's year two. What are we doing here? Haven't been good in a decade. Like, you know, let's be realistic. And I think sometimes people get caught up in the woo-woo, like, yeah, I'm super fired up. This guy is high energy. And then, you know, it fizzles out pretty quickly when, you know, nothing necessarily changes. So, you know, be realistic and be ask questions and be, what's the word I'm looking for? You want to be cautiously optimistic. That's the phrase I'm looking for. Like, yes, you want to like be fired up that you're being recruited, but do your due diligence on your end, because what you don't want to do is end up in a position in 1, 2, 3 years where, you know, you feel as though what you went through in the recruiting process does not match up to your experience at that college. And that's where I think a lot of people end up in the wrong boat, because you drank the Kool-Aid on this end, and then you get there and your experience doesn't match up. And I always thought that, you know, Joe talked about it a couple of weeks ago, and I know a lot of people feel this way, but I always thought that, like, you know, what I tell you in the recruiting process needs to match up with what it is that we do in this program day in and day out. Like, I'm not going to tell you stuff that doesn't happen or we don't do here. Like, you know, you can go look at my bio. You can read the amount of guys that have been all conference, all regional, all American. Like, that stuff's all out there for you to see and read. Like, you can go see that stuff. Like, that's there, you know, and we're going to talk about, you know, a lot of things that go on within this program that I believe in, that I want us to do, that, like, what's going to happen day in and day out. And that's going to match up when you get here. That's what you're going to get, you know, because I wanted to make sure that I was upfront on what it is that you're going to get, right? Like, I was at a school. You know, 80,000 all in to go to. Like, you're paying that sticker price. Like, this is what you're going to get, and that better match up. You know, so I think a lot of people kind of get caught up in the recruiting process of, like, wow, I really like what I'm hearing here. And then they get there, and that what you are told and what you get doesn't match up. And that's where we end up with some issues.
Yeah. I think the other piece too, you know, the research is really important, but you got to have a good idea of what you're trying to get, right? If you want to win and if you want to get developed, that's where it can get gray, right? Like, there's Division I programs that never win. They're 10 and 50 every year. And they never move anybody on. They never have all conference players. They never have, you know, all Americans and that kind of stuff. And, you know, if you're that kind of gray area player, which a lot of kids are, you know, where you're a, you know, you might be a Division I guy, you know, that everybody wants to be, but maybe your experience at a really good Division II or Division III program is going to be a lot more fulfilling, right? There's something to be said about being in a winning environment. There's something to be said about competing to win conference championships and go to NCAA tournaments. And you're not going to get that at all Division I schools. And, you know, I think a lot of parents and I think a lot of players need to separate that link to the division from what they're actually trying to accomplish and what they're actually trying to get. Like, you know, that was one of the things that was really cool about Marist is that, yeah, like, we weren't the biggest program, right? But when I was entering that program, all they did was win baseball games. And that was probably the most appealing thing to me. And it was something that matched up when I got there. Like, we played in an NCAA tournament. Yeah, we weren't as good as LSU. Like, make no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Like, we weren't as good. But we expected to win. We won a lot of games. And that was I would have never traded that experience to go play at a quote-unquote higher level of Division I baseball and get my ass kicked all year round. Like, that's not fun. Like, I would much rather have played at Marist, had the experience I had, and done what we did, than be able to say, oh, well, I played in the, you know, I played in the ACC, but, you know, we were the 12th best team in the ACC every year, and we got our asses kicked all the time. It may not be the best example, but you get what I'm driving at. And I think for a lot of parents and a lot of players, like, being able to sort through it, take a look at those programs, like, these programs that win a lot, it's not by mistake. Or you don't luck into, you know, if you're a Division I program, like, you don't luck into 30 wins out of 8 to 10 years. Like, especially if you're a Northeast team where you're going to play 60% of your games on the road, like, you don't luck into 30 wins. You're good. Like, that's a good program. That's a place that's going to win. They're going to develop guys. They're coaching the game the right way. You know, same thing at the Division II and Division III levels. Like, teams that are consistently above 500 all the time. Like, that's not by accident. That's because there's something that they're doing. They're either identifying really good players, or they got an awesome culture. It's likely a combination of the two, and they're able to do really good things. And, you know, that stuff's really valuable, because at the end of the day, most guys aren't going to play professional baseball, and it's an even fewer amount than it was 10 years ago. You got the reduction in rounds, they consolidated minor league baseball. So if that's your driving factor, then I think you're a little bit misguided, because one, you need to play games in order to get good. But two, your college experience is going to be what you remember. And, you know, if you have an opportunity to play at a really awesome Division II or Division III school, or a Division I school that's going to win 12 games a year, you know, I think you need to think long and hard about what your priorities are and, you know, what do you want to be a part of. Sure, that'll ruffle some feathers, but I think it's, you know, I know it's something that we talk about with guys that we work with, is, you know, we want them to have a good experience. Like, it's not just about the bumper sticker. It's about that experience that you get to have as a college athlete. And I can tell you, it's way more fun to win than it is to lose, you know, period. Yeah, winning is fun, Keith.
I always used to say this, and I still do. Like, what's the point of doing all of this if you're just not going to compete? Like, you know, like, the amount of time, energy, and effort that you put into a college baseball season is, until you do it, you don't understand what goes into it. Just what's the point of doing all of it if you're just going to go get your teeth kicked in week in and week out? Like, I'd rather go do all of the things that it is that I need to do in order to be competitive at a program where I'm going to win, or have a chance to be competitive and win a lot more. Whether that's going to be at the Division II or III level versus a Division I program, or a Division III program versus Division II, whatever, however you want to look at this. Like, and I don't think it's like no one's trying to ruffle feathers. Like, this is just the reality that no one really ever wants to talk about. But, like, records are out there. What people have done from a track record of coaching is out there. Like, there's a lot of things you can do if you just Google. Don't take everything.
I think you hit on something that's really important, because there is like, and we always talk about, like, the nuance, and that's why we do this podcast, is so we can talk about this stuff. But when you're evaluating a program, and you had kind of mentioned it, is that there are programs that aren't good right now, but maybe there was a coaching change. Like, that's an opportunity to be the reason that a program becomes good. That's very different than going to a program who's been bad for 10 years and you're not seeing significant coaching changes, or you're not seeing significant improvement. And there's a list of schools at multiple levels that you'll see a new coach come in and the change is immediate, because that coach is really good at what he does and he flips the culture, and you go from, you know, a 10 win team to a 19 win team. Like, that's a massive jump. So if you're a player and you're getting recruited by a program like that, don't discount it. And that's why the research part is important, is that you need to be able to look and go, oh, all right, they weren't that good, but I can see where they're going. And maybe I'm the piece of the puzzle that gets there, because there's something fulfilling and important about that as well. So the research is a valuable piece of this, and there's so much information that's available. Take advantage of it so you can learn about where these programs fit and kind of how, you know, this tier system breaks out for us. And, you know, I think it's informative about the competitiveness across college baseball. And, you know, I think we've hit on kind of the crossover for a lot of this, but I'd be remiss to not finish the final tiers here. So I'll just hit them real quick, and then I'll hold on.
Before you continue, I just want to say, like, it goes the other way too, right? Like, there could be a coaching change, and after 2 or 3 years, you see the wins and losses go this way.
Yeah.
It goes both ways. Like, you know, because you start hearing, like, well, in the last 5 years, we've done this. Like, you know, go look. Who's the head coach? Like, what was the staff? Did that staff move on to, you know, a better job? And, like, they won with the old staff's players, and now the players they're bringing in are, you know, not winning? You know, like, it goes both ways, right? Like, you know, and again, like, it goes to the research end of, you know, when you're going through this process, like, what has gone on in recent years? Like, A, when you took over, you're really good, and they were really good under the old staff. And then over the last 3 years, like, the wins have ticked down, you know? So, and there's a multitude of things, but, like, those are things that you want. Like, it goes both ways. Like, yeah, it could be a new staff that's flipped the culture. Conversely, it could go the other way too.
Good point. Thank you for interrupting me.
Okay. Thank you.
So we ended up tier five there. Tier six for me, once again, like, it gets a little wishy-washy here, so we're making some generalizations. But tier six is, like, your good Division II programs, JUCO, NAIA, high-level Division III. You got Tier 7, which is going to be your lower-level Division II, some pretty good Division III programs. And then Tier 8 is going to be your average, below-average Division III. And then Tier 9 is going to kind of be your lowest level of college baseball. And one of the things I would add to, just because those tiers are at the bottom, and we've alluded to this, it doesn't mean that you can just go there because you want to go there, right? If it's a program that is serious, that is out there recruiting, like, you generally still have to be a pretty good high school player to play at those programs. And, you know, you don't just get to go there because you want to go there.
You can go there and be a student and try, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to go be a college baseball player.
Even those really bad teams at the bottom of college baseball, they still got good players, and it's not just a I can play because I want to play situation. And I think that that's really important.
Right.
So we've alluded to it, like, playing college baseball is a privilege. It's not a right. Like, you still got to earn it. You still got to compete while you're there. You still got to show up every day. You still got to go to the weight room. Like, you still have to do all the things that every other college baseball player has to do. And there's a small percentage of folks that are, of players that are qualified to do that, and there's an even smaller percentage of players that are willing to actually put that effort forward when they get there.
I concur.
Any closing thoughts on the topic, Coach Glass?
I just think the thing that I hope shines through all of this is that, you know, there's a lot that goes into the process and what it is that you're looking for. And that, you know, I think there's a lot of people that we've talked about, or excuse, not about, talked to, you know, that kind of just get that narrow mindset of, like, you know, well, it's a Division I school, like, yeah, but you're also getting recruited by a handful of Division IIIs here that are far more competitive and are going to compete nationally. I think if, you know, you need to know what it is that is important to you. And if you're going to sit in front of me and tell me that you want to compete and you want to play at a high level and be able to be, you know, on super successful teams, like, then, you know, what you're telling me should match up with the schools that it is that you're looking to be recruited by. You know, if you tell me you want to be competitive and you go to a team that hasn't had a winning record in a decade, like, I'm just going to think that you're in it for the Division I, hoodie that you're going to get. You know, so there's a lot more that goes into it. There's super high level baseball being played at across all three divisions and into JUCO and NAIAs as well. So, you know, and the other part would just be do your research. You know, be as informed as possible going through this process. Like, this is why we do this. There's podcasts, there's you know, our website and some of the other stuff that we have on the horizon that we have coming out. You know, but there's we have the information. You know, but if nothing else, Google is your friend. Get on there and start figuring out what's going on at these programs it is that are reaching out to you and talking to you.
I totally agree. And with that, I think we will end this week's episode of Dugout Dish. If you're watching us on YouTube, hit the like button, subscribe.
Smash it.
Yeah, smash it, if you will. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at emdbaseball.com. If you want to find out more about us, go to our website. Happy to help. Listen in next week. Talk to you guys soon.